Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. I am Yada. We're here with Kirk and Dee this evening. It has been a tumultuous week on behalf of Yisrael. Things that we normally would not have expected. The big furor is over whether or not the United States is actually holding up weapons supplies for Israel to protect itself against crazy Muslims. And Netanyahu, after 3 or 4 months of doing everything he could to negotiate behind the scenes to resolve the issue, finally came to the point where he publicly revealed the problem. And the United States, with the senile administration, rather than say, "Oh, you know, our bad, we'll look into it and do what we can," called Netanyahu a lying buffoon and a brat, spoiled brat, for complaining about what didn't really exist, and the United States has not done such a thing. Well, I can guarantee you that there's no way that Netanyahu is going to put himself in a darker spot with the United States unless he's doing so to save his people. Mm-hmm. Just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's obvious that the Biden administration is lying. And you know, that's what that whole cast of characters do. They're really good at it. So that is a tragic turn for the worse in this past week. It is apparent really to all who are open-minded, who think through the whole process, that Israel cannot win the war in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And that not only can't they win the war in Gaza, with every day they fight the war in Gaza, their fate becomes far worse. That's not because, I don't say that because we care about Gazian casualties, because they don't. I know it's not politically correct to say it, but it is correct. There are no innocent mm-hmm. civilians in Gaza. The Gazians, as well as the Muslims and the so-called West Bank, Judea and Samaria, want Israel destroyed. The overwhelming preponderance of them view that armed resistance and killing Jews is the way to establish a Palestinian state in land that does not belong to them. Their goal is to eradicate Jews. They cannot be reasoned with. They can't be accommodated. They can't be reformed. They aren't radicalized. They're fundamentalists. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that since Hamas cannot be eradicated, there is no way to kill every Hamas member. Zero. Cannot be done. I said this 8.5 months ago. It cannot be done. And since it's impossible to fight a religious ideology with bullets and bombs and since you manufacture far more enemies than you kill when you approach a religious death cult, which is what Islam is this way. And you don't even acknowledge who you're really fighting. You continue to say that you're fighting Hamas or Hezbollah or Iran, and they're not the enemy. The enemy is Islam. And so you won't even acknowledge who your enemy is. You don't know how to fight them effectively. As a nation, know squat about the nature of the religion or its 1,400-year war on Jews. And when you lash out in ignorance, bad things happen. And now Israel is in a situation where the entire world has turned against Israel because of the images that come out of Gaza with broken buildings and the like. And Israel's in an impossible situation there. You know, they're being accused of genocide and of famine. So they're supplying more food than ever before, but Hamas confiscates it. The food trucks just sit there. Food rots.
Right.
Anybody that tries to get the food as it was intended is shot by Hamas. So you can't feed them. Israel's accused of genocide. It'd be the first time in the history of the universe that somebody has been accused of genocide while providing copious amounts of food for the people. The first time ever that somebody can be accused of genocide while sacrificing the blood, the lives of their women and children, their sons and daughters, rather than bombing the entire enclave out of existence, which they could have done. If they wanted to perpetrate genocide, they could have done so without losing a single Jewish life. And yet to avoid it, they risk their own sons and daughters. It shows you just how far the world has gone down the rabbit hole of progressive ideology. It is one of the dumbest things I think I've ever witnessed, to have people who claim to be liberal and enlightened in favor of women's rights promote a religion so diabolical, so opposed to freedom, so opposed to women's rights, so opposed to anything that liberals hold dear. They are all fascists in their country. There is no free speech. There is no freedom of any kind. Certainly no rights for sexual preference. All the things that liberals hold dear, Muslims despise and will kill you for. So it is one of the great tragedies to see, like, a graduation at Stanford and to see a third of the students completely squander the education they were offered by walking out wearing gear that identifies them with the terrorists. But this is what has happened. We have victim shaming in the worst possible, and it's largely because Israel did not listen when I shared with them what they needed to do. There were four things that Israel had to do immediately if it was going to protect Israel, and they did none of them. And you might say, well, you know, who are you when Israel has its generals and its elected officials and its rabbis? Who I am should be important to you, because the God whose name you do not know, the God who you rejected 3,000 years ago, has chosen me to tell you these things. And you'll either listen or you will die. That's the bottom line to all of this. So we are in a position where I am, have a very heavy heart for what's happening. I realize that this current administration has pushed the world into opposing camps with China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea in an alliance against the United States, Russia, and maybe a couple of Middle East countries, but countries want nothing to do with what we are selling because we are forcing countries into economic suicide with our continued demands for this ongoing war against Russia through a proxy. It is among the worst things that America has ever done, other than to be the Trojan horse for the Biden administration to audition as the next Neville Chamberlain, sacrificing Israel in a two-state non-solution, or you could call it the final solution, those words should sting, giving a terrorist state to the Muslims as a reward for their atrocities on 10/7. I had the opportunity, and we may as well jump into it. I was prepared to go right back into the revelations that were shared in Coming Home 1 today. But over the past week, I have written a new conclusion, a final chapter of Goddamn Religion. This is now right around page 500 of Goddamn Religion, Volume 5. So at this point, there have been 3,700 pages of exposure and condemnation of Islam. I have translated virtually every surah in its entirety. I have presented every meaningful hadith. I've rearranged the Quran chronologically, and I have provided a running commentary exposing what was wrong with every statement that Allahihahu made.
Yep.
And have proven that Muhammad was a schizophrenic psychopath and that his wannabe God was a sadist.
Mm-hmm.
The case is overwhelming. It is irrefutable. That doesn't mean that it's going to fundamentally change the world. We are currently running a really disappointing situation with Amazon. Amazon has become a monopoly. They control 80% of book distribution worldwide. They control 91% of print on demand, which is what we are, worldwide, 91%. And they're obnoxious. They're capricious.
Yeah, they are.
They're fickle. They don't think. They will harass their authors.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are listening to this program know that I have devoted the last 23 years, almost every waking hour of my life over that time, 12, 14-hour days, 6 and 7 days a week, to writing the Yada Yahweh series. There are now 33, I think, books that are part of that series. They have been most of them rewritten 4 and 5, 6, 7, 8 times as we learn more and more along the way. I do not have a co-author. I do my own translations, even now in Goddamn Religion with Arabic, even of the Christian New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the commentary and all of the insights are mine. I don't turn to others for insights or guidance. The material is not only 100% original, with every word and phrase having been written by me. There are thousands upon thousands of unique insights in these books that have not been discussed by anyone ever.
Right.
I don't think you could have a more clear-cut example of owning the copyright to this material. You know, we put in about the author and 2 pages in every book. We put the copyright information on the copyright page of every book. We link to the website that has an about the author and copyright statement for all the books. And it is obvious that online, when we offer these books free, that is something that I have decided to do out of compassion and generosity.
Right.
But Amazon came up with a bot not long ago, and the bot's purpose was to search online for content that resembles the books that they were selling. And of course, because for the past 22 years we have offered the content of the Yada Yahweh series free online in its entirety, they find not only on the Yada Yada site, but on other sites that mirrored this content, lots of places where the material is identical. That doesn't violate copyright. That just says I'm charitable, that I felt that it was important to give away the material rather than charge for it. But no matter how many ways and times we have said that to Amazon, there doesn't appear to be a thinking individual in the process. We have not received a single thoughtful reply from them. Over the past month, there have been 25 attacks on us. 25 times in the past month that they've taken our time while accusing us falsely of copyright violation. And we did everything we could to explain, no, we just choose to present our material online for free. It's charitable. Say, is not against your policies. It is not a violation of copyright. Everywhere you go, you will see my name. And that was something that is quite different than what we were doing 15 years ago. 15 years ago, I was marketing everything anonymously under Yada, wrote it anonymously under Yada. I don't do that anymore because of copyright. And we have to hold copyright because we have rules. You cannot use the material that I'm translating and my insights to promote a conspiracy, as we've seen people do, to promote a religion, as the black Hebrew Yisraelites will do from time to time, or to advocate some political agenda. You can't do it. We prohibit the use of this material for that. And we have very clear standards as to how you can use it. And one of the things, two other standards. One is you cannot use anything that I've written to inspire a violent act. Use your words, become informed, but don't lash out violently nor encourage anybody else to. And, of course, if you're going to use the material that I have devoted my last 22 years to creating for you, credit to where credit is due. Acknowledge where you got it so that people reading it know where to turn if they want more. And so they have the opportunity to see things in context. So we will continue to offer the book free. There is an EPUB that David has created that enable people to read these books on their phones and tablets, download them so they don't even have to be connected to the Internet. The online presentation of our books on laptops, on tablets, on smartphones and on computer monitors is spectacular. David has done a marvelous job in enabling all of that for us. And that is our primary outreach. And then we reach out via social media, indeed, the sites that you manage for us. And there's a number of people like Steve, for example, that have YouTube channels that promote these programs and the text of these books. And we're going to continue to do that. And at this point, our account is suspended at Amazon. We'll see how they react going forward. And so we have no choice but come Monday, we will reach out to other on-demand printers and start using them and also using others for e-books, leaving us less vulnerable to Amazon going forward. Unfortunately, this has been very distressful for Jackie. And so all of us who love Jackie and appreciate the work that she does, this would be a wonderful time to support her because, as I say, she's undergone a lot. So it's very difficult for her. For me, it's simply a distraction, an annoyance, and now I have complete distrust and Amazon. But it's the nature of monopolies as to why they're not desirable. That said, I want to share, and we'll begin a series of programs, on an attempt to take what we have learned and to reorder it in a way that helps Yisrael in particular, Yehudim, Jews. But Goyim, for the next 2 years, you're also welcome. You're going to need to get your act together pretty quickly because you really have 2 years to get your act together and mm-hmm. become part of the covenant. And it orders it such that we have a better appreciation for what's coming and for our role in this process. I was subjected to something. I would use the term subjected. I don't mean that to be detrimental, but it was mm-hmm. very uncomfortable for me. And I think it was time goes by so quickly when you put your nose to the grindstone and try to focus on things that sometimes I'm unable to create the chronology now because I'm just, as I say, I'm so devoted to trying to check this off to get goddamn religion, for example, finished. It'll be finished tomorrow.
I understand. Yeah.
But there was a conversation, and it was Dee who called. She had been doing a lot of research. She'd collaborated also with Jackie and with Kirk, but it mostly her research into my translations and the books that I've written and the insights and the conclusions that I had drawn. And it was her conclusion that the reason that there are three Zoroa, the reason that Yahweh provides so much information about the role of his final witness, the Bashar, the herald, the mm-hmm. Nakri, the Nakar, the observant foreigner, the Choder, Yada,
mm-hmm.
is because it's a big deal to him. It's a big deal to his people.
Yes.
In fact, it is such a big deal to Yahweh, Yehudim, Yisrael, and the final three harvests, certainly the last two of the last three harvests, it appears that Yahweh has a select three. Moshe was the one who was the reluctant liberator. He's the I think the finest example of humanity to have ever lived,
mm-hmm.
foremost in character, sterling intellect,
yeah.
great moral judgment, exceedingly articulate, a quick study. But Moshe brought us the Torah and shared with us what it means to be liberated, if you will, from human, religious, political, economic, and military schemes. Dode then fulfilled the invitations to be called out and meet the first three of them that Moshe articulated. But there's a problem. While those are easily the two most important people in God's story, among Israelites and Yehudim, the Torah has actually been replaced. You will hear the rabbis say, Torah this, Torah that, we Torah, we Torah, we Torah. If we weren't Torahing, you know, Israel wouldn't exist. Bull.
Right.
They're not Torahing at all. What they're doing is studying their Talmud. They have replaced Yahweh's Torah with their Talmud. They kiss and they fondle their Torah. They'll read a few lines for it, but the religion isn't based on the Torah. Torah is anti-religious. There's no mention of a rabbi in the Torah. No.
Nope.
Their religion is based entirely on the Talmud. Rabbinical arguments. And God is disgusted with the rabbis. Hates them with a passion. In fact, almost every rabbi will have an express ticket to Sheol, a very place that they deny.
Good.
For what they have done. They have been the greatest enemy of God's people. And there is something even worse than replacing the Torah and the lives of God's people with the Talmud. Because with that, there was replacement of Yahweh as God.
Right.
He was replaced by rabbis. who are the authority figures, not Yahweh, his name won't even be mentioned. They give lip service to a G-D and a Hashem, an Adonai. But they have replaced Yahweh's authority in the people's lives. But from Yahweh's point of view, while those two things are really bad, there is something far worse. And that's because Yahweh, first and foremost, is a father. And his first and foremost son is Dod, David. He's the one person that Yahweh says, and he says it three times. He is my son. I am his father. And yet in rabbinical Judaism, they deny that God has a son, which
yes,
means that God's a liar.
You.
I don't think Yahweh's a liar. If he said,
nope,
this is my son, I am his father, then that's what he meant. Moreover, Yahweh says that Dod is my firstborn. He is my beloved. He is my chosen one. Furthermore, in Messianic Judaism, and there is a thing called Messianic Judaism, they're not, it's confused them with the Messianics, who think that the misnomer Jesus was the Messiah. Jesus never even existed. They are awaiting, and their whole world revolves around this warlord who is supposed to arrive, whose name they do not know, at some future date to rescue them. Which means they are denying that Dod is Yahweh's chosen Messiah. Dod was anointed three times by Yahweh as the Messiah. He is the returning Messiah. That means also that they're not acknowledging that, according to Yahweh, Dod is returning as king, not just king of Israel, king of the universe, all of it. You might say, wait a minute, it's Yahweh's king. They wouldn't say Yahweh's kingdom because they don't know his name and hate his name. No, they wouldn't say that, but what they would say is, you know, that the kingdom of God, perhaps, G-D. But the problem with that is that Jews, 3,500 years ago, begged Yahweh never to speak to them again. Don't ever speak to us again. We never want to hear your voice again. Yahweh said, no problem. I agree.
Yeah.
You guys are obnoxious. You're ungrateful. You're embittered. You have no appreciation for anything I've done for you. I have no desire to speak to you anyway. But I made a promise to Abraham, and I'm going to keep it. And as such, I will continue to speak to my people through my people. The first of those was Moshe. And there have been a number along the way. They are very few in number, actually. And very few of them have a written legacy from which we can examine. Less than 40, perhaps 40 all total, if you consider all of the mentions here or there that are recorded by others who are writing about them. It's not a lot of people over the course of human history. And so Yahweh has decided, based upon what the Jews demanded, and he agreed with them, that I will not speak to my people directly. I will speak through my chosen ones. The most chosen of all of humanity was Dod. And Dod wrote between Mashal and Mizmor, Psalms and Proverbs, 100 of them. Plus, he plays the starring role throughout the writings and the prophets. We know more about him than we know about anyone else. His name is mentioned 1,100 times, second only to Yahweh, considerably more than Moshe's. And so as a father to his son, his beloved son. There's something that Jews have done, and this is not just blaming Jews, because Gentiles have been worse at this than the Jews have been. But the Jews ought to have known better. And if they had known better, the world would be so much better.
Yeah.
Jews have universally denied not only that Dodd is the Son of God, not only that he is the Messiah who is returning, not only is he the shepherd, not only is he the exemplar of the covenant, not only is he the returning king, but Dodd is something far more important than all of those things. And that's a pretty good resume up to that point.
Yes.
Dodd is our Savior.
Yeah.
He is, of the three Zeruah, he is the Zeruah. He is the sacrificial lamb. He is the Pesach Eav.
Mm-hmm.
He, his corporal Bashar body, fulfilled Pesach. His nefesh soul was laden with the guilt of every covenant member and taken into Sheol and deposited there on Massa.
Mm-hmm.
He endured the greatest sacrifices in human history for our benefit, for the benefit of the children of Israel, and almost to a person. In fact, until 20 years ago, there wasn't a single person on the planet who would acknowledge what Dodd had done on their behalf. The fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikkurim. In fact, even 10 years ago, I don't think you could find a single person on planet Earth that would acknowledge what Dodd had done in fulfilling Pesach, Matzah, and Bikkurim.
You're right.
The single greatest gift ever offered. The greatest sacrifice ever made and completely and universally denied by Jews. And, of course, you have the Christians who took all of it, every accolade, every achievement, every title, and applied them to a mythical misnomer, created the world's most popular religion in the process. God, angry, I'm going to say something more derogatory than that, his righteous indignation over the realization that there were copious, hundreds of vivid prophecies explaining precisely what Dodd was going to do, dating back 3,000 and 3,500 years ago, that are clear, poignant, undeniable, irrefutable, and that his people, for all of that time, have denied them, even refuted them, depriving every Yehudim, Yehud, Israelite, during that entire time of eternal life. What a tragedy. That changed starting just about 23 years ago, gradually, over time, slowly. Yahweh couldn't find a single one of his people to speak through, and he knew it. He knew it before, I think, he even created the universe, that this was going to happen. And so his Torah and his prophets are filled with an announcement that because he couldn't find a single one of his people, a Yehud, a Israelite, who would listen to him, particularly on this most important subject of what Dodd has done, that he went to a goy. Yep. A foreigner. And asked him to do what Jews were unwilling to do. In fact, Jews won't even openly condemn religions. You know, they'll squeal around and their little condemnations in secret on Christianity, but they don't even come out openly and say it. In fact, there was a speech here recently at the United Nations where the UN ambassador by Israel talked to them about the, you know, the world, about how their Jesus was a Jew and they're praying to a Jew and they've got Jewishness in them because of their Jesus Christ. No, they don't. Jesus Christ never existed. Jesus Christ wasn't a Jew. Dod was the ultimate Jew. And it's Dod who fulfilled Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE. In all this time, 3,000 years since Dod was king, all of that time, I don't think there's been a single Yehudim who has explained that there are five conditions and five benefits of the covenant. And if you want to receive the five benefits, you need to accept the five conditions. I don't think there's been a single Jew who has correlated the Mikre with the covenant and said if you want to receive those benefits, you achieve them through the Mikre. I don't even think they know what Mikre means. An invitation to be called out and meet with God. They most certainly don't understand the purpose of Pesach. They celebrate it like it's 7 days when it's one day. It's the first day of matzah. They don't even celebrate matzah. It's just a ingredient during their Passover celebration. They have no clue what Bukurim means, and it's from Bukur, the plural of Bukur, for it means firstborn children. And so having no clue what these things mean, they even get further afield because they don't like Shabu anymore because the Christians confiscated it by calling it Pentecost when it has nothing to do with Christianity. Nothing. Church wasn't born on Pentecost. There is no church with God. Never has been, never will be. Oh, Shabu hasn't been fulfilled yet. Why the Christian New Testament's presentation of it is so unbelievably insane. It will be fulfilled. It's going to be fulfilled in 2 years. It's the last opportunity for Goyim and the last opportunity for Yehudim if they wish to be precluded from having to endure the worst of the time of Jacob's troubles, where it's going to get geometrically worse for Jews worldwide. And so with God's own people replacing the Torah with the Talmud, replacing Yahweh with rabbis, with failing to acknowledge the accolades and the titles and the achievements of Dod, unwilling to acknowledge the importance of and the conditions and benefits of the covenant or the timing of and the purpose of and the intercorrelation of the Mikre with the Beret. God was and his people were in a very difficult spot. There would be no one at Shabuah. Hadn't been a Jew who had gotten their act together in 3,000 years. How was that going to change? There would be no Shabuah harvest. There'd been no Teruah harvest. God can't intervene and speak directly to the people. He's made a pledge not to do that. They wouldn't listen anyway. Wasn't a single Jew willing to answer the call. So if we had not been willing and had God not empowered us to make this possible, there would be no Shabuah harvest. There would be no Teruah harvest. There would be no return. And God has never failed in a prophecy. So what God did is he decided long ago that there would be a person, not pretend that this person was anything special, but he was willing. He was passionate. He was reasonably intelligent, fairly articulate, a quick study, and more than anything, just uniquely passionate about Yahweh and his family to devote what will be 30 years of his life to this cause, to Yahweh's mission. And because this individual was empowered to recognize Dode's role and write about it, write 30 books on his translations of the Dead Sea Scrolls, to share insights with Israel about what God is asking of them, when these things are going to happen, while also clearing the path of all obstacles. The reason that we went back and rewrote Prophet of Doom as Goddamn Religion, it became 5 volumes, is that Islam is a tremendous obstacle to the redemption of God's people. They want them dead. They want them out of Israel. They are at cross purposes with Yahweh. They advocate religion. They advocate submission. They advocate the slaughtering and the denunciation of Jews. They are a horrendous obstacle in the way. And there aren't 1% of Israelites that understand that they're at war with Islam. That there's no such thing as a Palestinian. There's no such thing as an innocent civilian in the Islamic world, or that Islam has declared war on all mankind, beginning with Jews, and that war was declared 1,400 years ago, and it is ongoing. You deny it at your peril. And it was also written 4 volumes completely repudiating the Christian New Testament,
mm-hmm.
proving that it is absolutely false, which is a tremendous obstacle because rabbinical Judaism is largely a response to Christianity. Christianity claims this was the Messiah, this was the Son of God, this was our Savior. All of this happened, you know, around Passover. And then they began to hunt down Jews because Christianity was so anti-Semitic, they blamed Jews for killing their God. And so rabbis, to rail against it, created a false Messiah of their own, Bar Kokhba, which led to the diaspora. Stupid. And they haven't gotten over it even today. And it was by neglecting the fact that it was Dode who fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Bekorim, and that he was the Son of God, and that he is the Messiah, and the returning King of Kings, that because they failed to do these things in that vacuum, Christians were able to create a revisionist version of events and apply all of those achievements and accolades and acknowledgments to a fictitious character because something obviously happened in 33 CE. So largely, Jews are responsible for the creation of Christianity, just as they're responsible for the creation of Islam. One of the things that I present throughout Goddamn Religion is the complicity of rabbis in creating the Quran. And so in all of that time, there hasn't been a single member of the Jewish religious community who has acknowledged the truth. And things were looking dire because we don't have much time left, 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
2 years to the Shavuot harvest and just 9 years to the Teruah harvest, 9 years to Yahweh's return with his son, our Savior, and the Messiah, King of Kings, Dode. So Yahweh took the time to tell his people that he is going to inspire a goy to tell them the truth, to wake them up, to play a pivotal role in bringing them home. And this is so important to the redemption, if you will, the reconciliation of Israel, that God prioritizes this role almost on par with Moshe. The individual is not a prophet. He's a witness. You don't need any more prophets. No time to even be a prophet. So he's a witness. And he, Yahweh realizes that Torah, that Moshe brought us the Torah teaching and guidance. Yahweh inspired him to convey it, and then in Devarim, he explains it. And then Dode, in studying it and writing about it, took it upon himself to fulfill the heart of it. But since all of God's people denied this, the role of we're playing, of awakening Israel to these truths, is every bit as profoundly important to Yahweh as what Moshe did to lead the children of Israel out of Mitzrayim.
Totally logical. Yeah.
And think of how few people were saved during that process. Caleb.
Wow.
Yosha ben Nun. Moshe. Aaron, maybe. Not many, right?
No.
But yet at the Shavuot harvest, there'll be tens of thousands. Be thousands at the Teruah harvest. May even be 7,000 at Kippurim. Well, that will be entirely based upon what Elia is able to achieve. And so this is stunningly important to God's people and therefore to God, and incredibly important to his son. So since the most beloved person in the whole story, God's favorite person, the most critical individual to understand is Dode, and we're the first ever to explain what he has done for us, God values this every bit as much as he values liberating his people from Mitzrayim. Because it's all for naught if we don't collaborate in this way. Now, there is more to the story than that, of course. Not only did Yahweh mention the role that we're playing hundreds upon hundreds of times, he stacked the deck. I would if I were him. You go to all the trouble to create the universe, communicate all of this, do all of this through the prophets. I'd stack the deck too.
For
okay,
sure.
I've got this guy. At least he's willing. He's going to give it the best he's got. But, you know, over time, since everybody has failed, I'm going to do what is necessary for him to prevail. And he has. You know, read Yeshayah 11 and the story of the Choder. And what Yahweh has availed him and empowered him in terms of insight and courage and understanding, fortitude, steadfastness to get this job done. So what I want to share with you is how I ended Goddamn Religion, because what I decided to do with it is to take an entirely different approach to what I had written 20 years ago with Prophet of Doom. And that approach was focused on, it's time to listen. You have very little time left. I think I've earned the right by clearing this major obstacle out of your path to give you some advice. Well, that section begins. Since I have risked my life, and I put my reputation on the line to compose Goddamn Religion, and since I have devoted the previous two decades of my life writing the other books comprising Yada Yahweh, I want to conclude our time together by sharing how you can become part of God's eternal family. Speaking through one of his prophets, Yahweh used several different words to emphasize the importance of listening in the opening stanza of the fifth chapter of Hosea. He begins, "Hear this, Shammah, those who are priests and have become religious leaders, ministers tasked with explaining and facilitating the participation in the bereth, the mikre, via the Torah. Pay attention and be attentive to what you're hearing. Listen diligently, family of Yisrael. Extended family of political leaders, open your ears to hear as tools to evaluate and consider. For this just assessment applies to you. Indeed, you have become a snare, a dangerous means to control others, a mitzvah with your means to be observant, in addition to a net spread out upon Tabor, a broken and confused world." Oh, just think of all the, what they call the mitzvah that religious Jews have created, that Jews have to keep and observe to be part of their religious community. You know, God's saying, that's a trap. You're dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You're a net that you've spread out over a broken and confused world. Yahweh, in this statement, has divided society into three segments, priests, people, and politicians. I believe they're listed in this order for a reason. If the Lowy had listened and done as they were asked, Israelites would have heard them speak of Yahweh. Had that occurred, they would have responded appropriately because God's word is consistent and it's compelling. And had they done so, the people would have relied upon Yahweh's priests and judges to properly interpret and apply the Torah, which would have negated the need for political and religious leaders, particularly rabbis. Should you be wondering who is addressing the three communities of Yisrael at this time, as time runs out for a successful reunion, the only viable candidates now are Yada and Elia. And Elia has not yet returned. The religious insurgents who are openly defiant, the prophet speaks on behalf of Yahweh, are intensely and deeply murderous, even genocidal. So I will judge them, inflicting the appropriate penalty on each of them, which is to incarcerate the totality of them. Think of that. He's speaking to his people. He's calling them rebellious insurgents that are openly defiant of him, and says that they are murderous, that they're genocidal. Genocidal means that for the better part of 3,000 years, they have taken every Jewish soul and led it to its doom.
Wow.
It says, I will judge them, inflicting the appropriate penalty on each of them. And that is to incarcerate the totality of them. Rabbis, you're going to hell, and deservedly so. The proponents of religion who are overtly hostile to Yahweh and his people, who deliberately pull the unsuspecting away from the proper path, are indeed genocidal from Yahweh's perspective. Think of how many souls have been caught up in Judaism, Islam, Christianity. And for that, they have earned their express ticket to Sheol. God is going to judge them, inflicting the appropriate penalty on each insurgent, which is, at the very least, to incarcerate them in Sheol. To be just, recompense is required. To be fair, especially to those who they deliberately cheated of their souls. Now, in this particular case, you're going to see Yahweh divide his people as Ephraim, Yisrael, and Yehudim. And that is because this is the time that they were not only disjoined from Yahweh, they were disunited among themselves. Mm-hmm. And the worst of the lot was Ephraim, representing the northern kingdom. And that's really no different than what we witness today. And Israel is a place divided. The nation at war is also at war with itself. You have progressives marching on Netanyahu's home, harassing him constantly, degrading him, and demanding that Israel capitulate with Hamas, which would be devastating. You will save maybe 50 lives and lose 5 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's the trade. Stupid. And yet, on the other side, you have the Haredim, who are nothing but parasites. And worse than parasites, they are misleading Israelites about God. They make God appear as ugly and as nasty and depressing as they are. So, it's the same situation. I myself am aware of Ephraim, ashes, worthless specks of carbon. And Yisrael, those who contend and struggle with God, they're not hidden from me either. For now, Ephraim, these worthless specks of carbon, is an unfaithful, immoral, and disingenuous religious whore. Zana, prostitute, a harlot, feigning affection. And Yisrael is defiled, is unclean, improper, desecrated, polluted. That was said 2,700 years ago. It is exactly the same today. It is sad, unnecessary, and inappropriate, but yet true. It has been a very long time since Jews listened to the voice of their God. They asked him not to speak directly to them, and he has honored that request by speaking through a wonderful group of prophets, and now to a large extent, a final witness. And while they are only marginally more responsive now, and that's about to change in a profound way. For the past 3,000 years, Jews have been their own worst enemy. Hosea 5:4. Their cultural traditions, societal customs, religious practices, and political dealings do not allow a return to their God. Indeed, it is certain that an illegitimate and duplicitous spirit is within them. Therefore, they do not know or understand Yahweh. I made some very blunt statements at the beginning of this program, which many might have thought were offensive. They were not my opinion. They're God's conclusions. He's right. If you don't like your God saying that your political dealings, your cultural traditions, your societal customs, and your religious practices do not allow, that they preclude a return to him, then change. Walk away from those things. It's the first condition of the covenant anyway.
Right.
If you don't want God to call you illegitimate and duplicitous. Stop being illegitimate and duplicitous. Yahweh, God, said that his people do not know or understand him. Lo Yada, Yahweh. The name of this series of books is Yada Yahweh. This is the opposite of that. Lo Yada, Yahweh.
No.
To not be familiar with. They do not acknowledge. They are unaware of. And they do not respect Yahweh. It's pervasive. Jews won't say his name. They don't acknowledge his Torah, preferring their Talmud. They disregard his covenant. They have completely corrupted his seven Moed Mikre. They've disregarded and denied his beloved son, our Savior and King. This remains resolutely true among the overwhelming preponderance of Yisraelites and Yehudim today. And with so many only doing so, and only 2 years before the Shavuah harvest, nine before the Teruah harvest, the ice will have to thaw. And hearts will need to be receptive soon. Now, please note, the prophecy pertaining to this day and mankind's issues during it were punctuated with the title under which this and every other book I have written has been heralded, whether Amazon likes it or not. Yada, Yahweh. Consider it an endorsement, something Israel has not heard in a very long time. Matter of fact, if you want to claim copyright infringement, then the copyright holder is Yahweh.
Yeah.
I have his authority to use his testimony. Moreover, the pride and arrogance of Yisrael testifies against his presence. Pride and arrogance of Yisrael testified against his presence. Therefore, Yisrael, those who contend and struggle with God, and Ephraim, worthless specks of carbon, will falter. They'll stumble. They're going to fall. They will be overthrown in their perversions, corruptions, and libelous errors. Yehuda, the beloved of Yah, will also waver and succumb along with them. There was a time during the Holocaust when Jews condemned their God for allowing this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it had nothing to do with God and everything to do with them. They denied him, and so there was nothing he could do for them. As bad as things appear now in the wake of worldwide protests against Israel, following the Islamic assault on the nation on October 7th, 2023, they will get decidedly, almost unimaginably worse. Not only is the handwriting on the wall and inevitable, Yahweh told us so thousands of years ago. So while the tiny nation will not be completely destroyed, nor its people entirely exterminated as Muslims envision, they're going to come surprisingly close. The prophet continues, within their flocks and among their herds, they will travel about to search, to inquire about, seek to hold responsible, and look to conspire against Yahweh. But they will not achieve what they seek. He has withdrawn from them. They have been untrustworthy and unreliable, having betrayed him and having been treacherous in their dealings with Yahweh. For now, they have fathered and brought forth offspring who are illegitimate and estranged children. So now, the crescent moon will devour them, along with her land. Israelites have flocked together more than any other race or culture in human history. Even when exiled from their homeland, they did so. Therefore, it is more instructive to view Bah Sion and Bah Bakar from this perspective, presenting the herd mentality of Jews, than it is to continuously view them as sheep, goats, and shepherds. Having migrated throughout Europe together and to the New World and encountering anti-Semitism wherever they have gone, rabbis have sought to hold God accountable. And they've done so for their poor reception and subsequent torment. But in all of this time and in all of their ways, they are no closer to the truth, and they're actually further from Yahweh. They have rebelled against his instructions. The consequence is to be excluded from his protection, leaving them vulnerable, especially to Muslims represented by the crescent moon. They have been Israel's deadliest enemy. Pretty pungent statement here. You know, with Israel's propensity to flock together as herds, traveling about, God is saying that they would do as they have done.
Yeah.
Seek to hold God responsible. They, rabbinic Judaism, they have actually conspired against Yahweh. God's saying, yeah, they can conspire all they want. It doesn't work.
Right.
Because all they have achieved is that I have withdrawn from them. In the process, they have become untrustworthy and unreliable. They're treacherous in their dealings with Yahweh. The very rabbis that get up and saying, you know, if it wasn't for us, the missiles that Iran sent, they would not have been knocked down. You know, you need us praying and studying Torah for Israel to survive because, you know, we're the ones communicating with Hashem.
Quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. If they were all gone, Hashem, the name Yahweh, would be delighted. And soon he will rid the planet of them. He despises them in their religion. For they have fathered and brought forth offspring who are illegitimate and estranged. So now, the crescent moon is going to devour them. Isn't that something? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I was pretty good at this prophecy thing.
I think so.
Yes.
Well, Yahweh and Yehudim have suffered through a protracted intermission. I would say that. That's a 3,000-year timeout for bad behavior. God has not forgotten his people. So seeking a different outcome, Yahweh asks, blow the shofar, this ram's horn trumpet, from Shof to strike out openly in a crushing and bruising manner, and shofar in a bright, fair, and beautiful way. In other words, there's two sides to this horn.
Mm-hmm.
Upon Gibeah, the hill, the clarion, in Ha-Ramah, the heights, signal and alarm and shout for joy at Beth Awon, home of trouble. It is the end for you as the other, O Benjamin.
Wow.
Well, the crescent moon represents Islam. The Benjamite is Paul. He announced himself as such. He is the founder of the Christian religion. He is the wolf in sheep's clothing. They represent the longest standing, collectively, between the two, and most debilitating foes of the Jewish people. And while the identity of these adversaries is relevant, are you aware that the one that Yahweh is asking to sound the shofar is the one he tasked with writing both goddamn religion and Twistianity, all to expose the anti-Jewish intent and false nature of these religions, while at the same time calling his people home through the rest of the Yada Yahweh series? God's very comprehensive when he tells his story. As affirmation of this, consider the next statement in this prophetic declaration. Ephraim, worthless specks of carbon, which means you're short-lived, will be horrified and desolated, which will occur in the day of rebuke and impeachment among the various tribes of Israel, those who contend and struggle with God. At that time, I will make Yada known, to be sure. Yada, Amon, written in the first person. I will be known and acknowledged for being truthful and reliable, dependable and enduring with Yada in the Hifl perfect. God will act at a certain point to acknowledge and then make known Amon, that which in the Nifl participle reveals that he will carry out and receive the benefits of being reliable in a vivid way. The shofar, ram's horn, provides an elegant, boisterous, and piercing, almost haunting resonance when it is blown correctly. It is the trumpet Yahweh selected to herald his announcements of both Shabuah and of Teruah. Most people know, well, I can't say most people know. Most people actually have replaced Teruah with Yom Kippur, with Rosh Hashanah. They don't even know what Teruah is. But if you know what Teruah is, it is from Ruah, which speaks of blowing this shofar and of conveying both the good and bad news, that religion is a death sentence, and that there is good news of a path to God, an opportunity to restore that relationship. But Shabuah also incorporates the blowing of a shofar. So both of these harvests are shofar-driven. It represents the last significant opportunity his people will have to tune into his message and listen to the warnings and provisions he is providing. Yehudim who turn a deaf ear to the final blast of the shofar on Shabuah and Teruah will likely remain estranged come Yom Kippur. They will miss Sukkah, the return to the garden, and the time to camp out with Yahweh, our Father. There will be too few of them by that time. And why would anybody in their right mind wait for the last moment of the last day to finally be prepared to receive Yahweh and his beloved Son? This realization is not only important to you, Yisrael, but to me as well. I was summoned by Yahweh on Teruah, the day of Ruah, signaling an alarm and shouting for joy in the fall of 2001. Troubadours, now having joined the chorus, we have been taka, trumpeting Yahweh's message as Ruah loudly and openly as possible ever since. Throughout this prequel to the last days, we have given equal time to the tragedies and triumphs which await a misled and unsuspecting world. Continuing Hosea 5:10. The government and religious leaders of Yehuda are perceived as untrustworthy and disloyal deviants. I suppose Yahweh read a copy of the Jerusalem Post. I will pour out a boundless amount of righteous indignation and intense displeasure, an outpouring of my disappointment upon them, as if it were fluid. Government and religious leaders. That's almost one and the same today with this particular coalition. Of Yehuda are perceived as untrustworthy and disloyal deviants. So I will pour out a boundless amount of my righteous indignation and intense displeasure, an outpouring of my disappointment upon them. Yeah. Israel, you and your God are estranged, and you have very little time to resolve that. Yahweh's animosity is consistently directed towards his people. That is not to say that Christians and Muslims or progressives are better, because they're not. It's just that God never made a promise to progressives, to Christians, or to Muslims. He doesn't know them, doesn't give a crap about them. They mean nothing to him. His people do mean something to him because he made a promise to Abraham that he intends to keep. So he's disappointed, but the fact is he's still attentive. And the only way that he can resolve this and honor his promise is for them to change. That's why we're here. Yahweh's animosity is consistently directed towards Israel. And most commonly, particularly if you read Yeshayah, the great prophet Yeshayah, the first 10 chapters of Yeshayah focus on one subject, the condemnation of Israeli religious and political schemes. And then, of course, these schemes flood down upon the many, and they corrupt the people beyond hope of words or reason. Now, in this case, Sar describes government officials and religious leaders, the authority figures within Yehuda, Judah. It offers the impression that they act as lords, as if they were royals designated by their God to rule. They believe they have the right to impose their will on everyone else, restricting the choices of others to control them. As evidence of that Yahweh was correct in this, with the overtly political left vying against the ultra-Orthodox right, Israel has become a house divided, without an ethical leader to be found among the millions. Even the top brass of the IDF have failed miserably and can no longer be trusted to defend the nation, which is about to implode under adverse world scrutiny and pressure. God's assessment of Jewish political and religious institutions, parties, and sects is that they're untrustworthy. They're corrupt. He calls them disloyal deviants, which sounds, again, like he must know them personally. He takes issue with their propensity for circular reasoning and thus being irrational and disingenuous. He does not care for their dishonesty or their egos, nor do I. Being misled and swayed by politics or religion, even conspiracy or patriotism, is a sure way to waste one's life and to lose one's soul. But it's not a crime. Misleading others is, by contrast, an offense worthy of divine judgment. Therefore, Jewish religious and political proponents and their advocates have engendered Yahweh's frustration. They torrent of his animosity is going to flood upon them in mountainous waves of righteous indignation. The very men who claim to speak for God and to represent his people are the most displeasing to him. And that is especially true of rabbis, because their Torah is the Talmud, and in it, rabbis speak over God. 5:11. Ephraim, this worthless speck of carbon ash, has been deceived and defrauded, extorted and oppressed. His competence in exercising good judgment is incapacitated, and his ability to reason is shattered. This is because he has become intent on, agreeable to, and fixated upon going after a variety of worthless religious dogmas. Wow. Hosea 5:11. Israel, God's got your number, and it's coming up snake eyes.
Gosh.
He says you're deceived. He says you're defrauded. He says you've been extorted and oppressed. He says that you can no longer exercise good judgment. Your ability to think and to reason is shattered. And it's all because you've been fixated on and have chased after worthless religious schemes. I told you so. Judaism is Israel's greatest impediment. It's crippling. Rabbis through the ages have incapacitated the people to the point that thinking is debilitated and choices are restricted. They deceive and they defraud. The productive are extorted, and the faithful are subjugated. The result is a sea of parasites adorned in black. But don't gloat. Should you be draped in a rainbow flag of colors, because you are no closer to the truth. In this regard, it is my expectation that while both groups will scream and slander me, one voice will overcome the many. And within a decade, Judaism and progressive politics will cease to exist. Rabbis are about to become extinct, as are social influencers. Likewise, over the past two decades, Prophet of Doom changed thousands of lives, providing those who suspected that there was something dreadfully wrong with a religion that thrives on terrorism to question and discard the doctrine that has sought to control them. However, realistically, jihadi Muslims are incapable of reading what has now become goddamn religion, preferring instead to prove the peaceful nature of their cult by threatening to kill me instead.
Yeah.
Nice point, boys.
Yeah, boy. I'm telling you.
Of course, questioning Paul, now Twistianity, devastates the religion that has harassed Jews for two millennia. Its audacity in replacing Yahweh's beloved son and Messiah with a mythical misnomer is something God will repay in kind, disowning them. Surprising to many, but nonetheless conclusively demonstrated in both Twistianity and goddamn religion, rabbis were largely to blame for the emergence of both Christianity and Islam. Had they recognized and celebrated the arrival of the Mashiach, Zeruah, Ben El, in fulfilling the promise of Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and had they not outlawed the use of Yahweh's name, Paul would have failed, and Christianity would not exist. And had rabbis not sold Muhammad Talmud readings, the Quran would not have been perceived as credible, and Islam would have died with it. Oh, what a different world it would be.
Mm-hmm.
As for Yisrael, the people's inability to think rationally has been a direct result of their favorite pastime, being religious. They have wallowed in human excrement as if it were a bubble bath and worn it as if it were perfume. Nonsense has become the only sense they have held dear. Hosea 5:12. But I am like a moth, perceived as something wasteful and fabricated to Ephraim. And much like a fungal parasite or a septic infection to the household of Yehudah. Can you imagine? This is the creator God of the universe. This is Yahweh, who formed the covenant relationship with Abraham and provided hope for all of us. This is Yahweh who liberated the children of Israel from Mitzrayim, who delivered the Torah, who inspired the prophets. This is Yahweh, and he says that his own people, because of their religiosity, treat him as if he were a moth,
mm-hmm.
perceived as something wasteful and fabricated, devouring their black mourning suits, I presume. And that rather than removing the fungus of yeast from the matzah, from the bread, during the celebration of matzah and recognizing that that fungal infection was religion, they view God as the fungal parasite. Oh, the heartache of it. The disgust. Israel, if you're the least bit bothered that you're listening to a goy and that the God of Abraham and Yishak and Jacob would choose a foreigner to speak to you, maybe you need to read this again and look in the mirror so that you understand why. And then get over yourselves. Change. Accept the truth. As God, of course, his assessments are valid and his testimony is accurate. Rabbis have written their own Torah, superseding Yahweh's, while scribing themselves in the starring roles. As a result, the religious are so bedazzled by their own brilliance, they hardly notice that Yahweh exists. So, it is little wonder that the relationship called for a divorce. Had they been mine, I don't think I would have dignified them with this letter, which is what Hosea is. It's the divorce letter. It would have been goodbye and good riddance. My frustrations are irrelevant because it's God's urging. I'm here begging them to return. Of course, that's because I take directions from Yahweh. And since he is God, that comes with many expectations and responsibilities. Mm-hmm. One of them is he must always honor his promises, no matter how undeserving the beneficiary. And one of the promises that is that at their request, he would not speak directly to them. So since there was no one among his people that would speak for him, here we are.
Yep.
He has vowed to reconcile his relationship with those who view him unkindly, and that includes Yisrael. So there are three remaining opportunities for the willing to recant their prior positions. We will stop broadcasting here momentarily, but those listening on the phone will still be able to hear us, and of course those who dial up the archives, and hopefully there'll be some merit to creating a talkie, a video presentation with an audio over that will bring this series of programs to Yisrael. This is a series of reordering the prophecies of what to expect over these next 9 years so that Israel is motivated to listen before it is too late. He continues, had Ephraim perceived that which was associated with his religious malady, his religious sickness, and Yehuda his oozing pestilent wound, then Ephraim would have gone to Asher, reaching out to the king of contentiousness and the adversary. But this would have been incapable of healing you. This cannot cure you from the infectious disease which ensnares you. Of course, this is metaphorical because the northern kingdom was never circumspect. They reveled in their religious beliefs and they celebrated false gods. There was no king Jareb, and the Israelites do not venture out on their own accord into Assyria seeking a cure for what ailed them. They were hauled away as slaves.
Yep.
Rather, Asher is being used symbolically to convey an alternative covenant, a religious path to anticipated benefits and blessings. And therein, Molech Yareb becomes the Lord of Contentiousness, a.k.a. the adversary, who was ever ready to beguile and disappoint them. And in this regard, the symbolic language continues with, as a result, I will be akin to a roaring lion, ha-shakal, to Ephraim, and like a conciliatory lion, ha-kafir, approaching the family of Yehuda. I myself will tear up or tear apart. Then I will either walk away or lift up, such that nothing will rescue or snatch away. Hosea 5:14. Now, there's an interesting play on words here, an example where similar things convey vastly different outcomes. Looking at Ephraim, the shekel lion is roaring. With it, God is posed to tear Yisrael away. Taraf, ripping the nation, and then Halak walking away. As for Yisrael, there would be An Netzal, no rescue anytime soon. But by contrast, with Yehuda, the beloved of Yah, the Kefir lion is conciliatory, ready to make amends. We know this because Kefir is from Kafar, to reconcile, serving as the basis for Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations. Then, as we approach the same verbal chain, we discover that Yahweh will, Ani, personally, tear his beloved from Ephraim, separating them from harm's way, while Taraf providing whatever they require. So now, rather than Halak walk away, God will be Nasa, lifting them up and carrying Yehuda home. As a result, and Netzal, no one will ever be able to take them away again. Now, since Yahweh mentioned that Israel will be devoured by the crescent moon, I would share that one of the uniquenesses of goddamn religion is that I explained why the infidels are called kafir and kafar throughout the Quran. It is errantly translated as disbelievers or wrongdoers. But Arabic is the bastard child of Hebrew.
Yes.
There is nothing in the word that relates to belief or lack of belief or right or wrong.
Right.
It's from kafar, spelled the same way in Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And what is kafar? It means the reconciled. The thing that Allah hates the most are the reconciled, because it's only the reconciled that thwart Allah's ambitions.
Yep.
If there are no reconciled, then the Teruah harvest does not occur. The Shabuah harvest does not occur. There is no one to return to on Yom Kippurim, and therefore no reason for Yahweh to return. Without the kafar, the reconciled, Satan wins. The planet may be lifeless, but he doesn't care. He can stay right here and avoid Sheol because God will have failed. But because there will be and are kafar, Satan fails. All we have to do is encourage men and women to choose Yahweh and be part of his covenant family, to be included in the Shavuah harvest, to be part of that remnant of Yisrael who chooses to welcome Yahweh as their God and Dod as their Savior and King, Messiah, on the Teruah harvest, and for Eliyah to do as he has so many times previously and prepare Yisrael to be anti-religious and therefore for Yahweh to return with Dod on Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations. That is the point of contention between Allah and Yahweh, or the kafar. Now, continuing to address Yehudim, this reads, I will go away and return to my place. Until they closely examine and carefully consider the way to receive the benefits of the relationship through the restoring witness of the eternal testimony, and they seek my presence, responsibly investigating and learning about my appearance. It is during the time of trouble that they will approach by earnestly seeking me, longing to learn about the relationship. This requires a little explaining. What Yahweh said over 2,700 years ago is that I'm leaving Israel. You're not listening to me anyway. I'm leaving Yehudim. You won't even say my name, even though my name is part of your name. I'm going back to my home in the spiritual realm. I can't stomach what you are doing. You're constantly irritating me. I'm just going to leave you. I'm not going to leave you forever. I will return. But I'm not going to return until you start taking what I have to say seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to do that until we approach the time of trouble, when your options are slim and none apart from me. So this spiritual restoration, this reconciliation of Yahweh with his people is occurring at the last possible moment. Because prior to this time, God's been gone. Listen, all of us that are part of the covenant family can type on the keyboard and create books until our fingers are nubs. You know, Jackie can fight the Amazon gremlins and get the books published. David can do his magic and create a marvelous site that can be read around the world, where the books are offered in their entirety free. You can promote them all through social media, and we can do our best to convey it in an inspiring way as part of these audio mm-hmm. programs. But if Yahweh is not involved, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
We can encourage you to walk away from religion and politics, to take his testimony seriously, to accept what he is offering. And he then is in a position to meet with you. And so you have to be willing to do all of those things before he can do that. But it's all for naught until he does. And he said right here, I'm not doing it until you start taking me seriously, which just happened over these last 10 to 20 years, growing in intensity, and that the big catalyst is the time of trouble, a period of great distress, of being besieged and restricted. It's a powerful thought.
It is.
It's a prophecy that you can't argue with. This is in Hosea. Hosea mm-hmm. is legit, man. He
yeah.
passes the Dabadim 18 test in flying colors. And Hosea was unique in that Yahweh went to Hosea and he says, I want you to experience what I'm experiencing. That's why you're going to go marry a temple prostitute. I want you to understand deep down in your gut what it's like to be abused by Israel. I want you to understand the unfaithful disgust that I feel. And I think it's true across the board. Look at the anguish that Abraham had in his life. Look at the anguish of Dode and the fractured family.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that I have had so many disappointments in this world. There have been some wonderful accomplishments and achievements, but the pain is real. The scars are there. But it's those
yeah.
things that develop our character and give us grit, make us tough, firm, steadfast, caring, capable, and particularly in tune with Yahweh. It's one of the things we've talked about in so many of these programs. The single thing we can do that's best of all is to understand what Yahweh is offering and expecting in return, and the way that he goes about interacting with his people to such an extent that we embody that in our own lives. We apply it to ourselves. We respond to Israel in the same tone and the same attitude and the same ferocity that Yahweh does. When our approach, our attitude matches his, then we're at a place where we can be most useful. Yahweh revealed very clearly that after divorcing Yisrael for religious infidelity, that he was going to back away. And he was going to allow his beloved to do as they have chosen to fend for themselves. Having previously come to their rescue, having devoted himself to guiding, teaching, and protecting them, God chose not to compete with their political and religious yearnings. He left them to their own devices. It has not turned out very well. Over the intervening millennia, Israelites were bludgeoned by the Assyrians, Babylonians, Egyptians, Greeks, and Romans. Then the Roman Catholics, Mohammed's Muslims, Ottomans, Crusaders, European Christians, conspiratorialists, Nazis, communists, Muslims again, and now by the last generation of ignorant, immoral, and irrational progressives. One would have thought that after a litany of abuse, there might have been a Jew or two who woke up one morning and thought, since our religious and political approach has resulted in 27 centuries of agony and failure, maybe we should flip back through time to find something that led to a better outcome.
Yeah, here's a guy.
Right.
Now, had they done so, the answer was obvious. You guys both know it.
All right. Hezekiah.
Hezekiah. Hezekiah wasn't anything special. No, I'm nothing special. But it's what happens when your life embodies Yahweh's goals as they are proclaimed in his Torah that you become extraordinary. So upon rediscovering a Torah scroll that was stashed away someplace in Yahweh's covenant home, the temple, he removed all traces of religion from Judea, all of it. And he returned to Yahweh and he celebrated the Mikre of Chag Matzah. And as a result, the 185,000 Assyrian soldiers camped outside of Jerusalem, the best equipped and trained militants on the planet, died without firing a shot. It was 50 times the number of Mujahideen that successfully invaded Israel on 10/7/23. Obviously, Yahweh is better equipped and more capable than the IDF. And in this case, there was no investment of bullets and bombs, no crying to the United States for delayed shipments, no expensive interceptors, nor the blood spilt of son and daughters. All it took was the proper understanding of and acceptance of reliance upon Chag Matzah, Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim. What did Dod perform for us? Chag Matzah.
Yes.
Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim. It saved the nation. It will save you. And yet, as if either defiant or insane, in the wake of the most recent massacre and subsequent tsunami of anti-Semitism, most Jews have doubled down against Yahweh, becoming ever more entrenched in divisive and irrational progressive politics and parasitic and suicidal Orthodox Judaism.
Yep.
As a direct result, Israel will be dismembered, sliced into pieces, to reward the Muslim savages by giving them a terrorist state carved out of the promised land. Thereupon, 10/7/23 will be played out again, but this time with 100 times the bombardments and belligerents, with catastrophic results. Jews will endure a decade of the worst treatment any race has ever received in the long annals of human atrocities. Worse than the Holocaust.
No joke.
And while the nation will be lost, a remnant will be spared, not once but three times, over the ensuing decade between 10/7/23 and 10/7/33. There will be a substantial harvest of standing grain on Shavuah, transpiring on a Shabbat, May 22nd at sunset in 2026 as the time of Jacob's troubles begins in earnest. Those receiving a trip to Shamaim will include the covenant family comprised of observant Yehudim and Goyim, represented by the two loaves of bread which are raised up to God. The second harvest is of olives, and thus Israelites. This reaping will occur on Teruah, following a solar eclipse on the Shabbat, beginning September 23rd, 2033. Yahweh does not want his children left in harm's way as the world comes crashing down on what is left of Israel. Then right on schedule, 10 days later, during a lunar eclipse, Yahwa and Dod will return to reconcile the relationship with the final remnant of Yisraelites on Yom Kippurim, 6:22 p.m. at sunset in Jerusalem, in the Yobel year of 6,000 Yah, October 2nd, 2033. Therefore, there is an answer, an assured opportunity, and an open invitation for some very special people to join the covenant family. However, be advised, there will be no sanction for any religious sect, political institution, or even nation. And so now that the options, timing, criteria, and consequences have been presented, I want Yisraelites and Yehudim to appreciate the implications. As foretold by Gabriel, who is Dod, and explained by Mikael, who is Yada, the last communication from Yahweh to Yisrael was through the prophet Malachi, 447 BCE, 1,000 years after the first prophetic revelation was delivered through Moshe in 1447 BCE. Other than what father and son, Yahweh and Dod, accomplished during the fulfillment of Pesach Matzah Bekodim in the Yobel year of 4000 Yah, 33 CE, God has returned to Shamaim, the spiritual realm, and left Yisraelites to wallow in their religious and political disorders and overall bitterness and defiance. Then 2,449 years later, on Teruah in 2001, God reengaged, albeit indirectly through a goy, just as he had foretold in the Torah and throughout the Nabi. Yahweh's intent is to call his people home through the words of the prophets while exposing the impediments along the way. With 2 years remaining in that 25-year mission, I've now compiled 33 books offered freely at yadayah.com, along with many thousands of hours of these audio programs in support of them. So as promised, Yahweh reengaged the moment he found someone, Ad Asher Shamar, willing to closely examine and carefully consider the way to receive the benefits of the relationship through the restoring witness of the eternal testimony. And as a result, Yisraelites have once again, Bakash Peneh, sought Yahweh's presence, responsibly investing and learning about God's reappearance. Truly extraordinary what has happened, exactly as God told us it would. Are you listening?
For sure.
And while many have and will continue to respond over the next 2 years, such that they are included in the Shavuah harvest of standing grain in May 2026, there will be two additional opportunities, Baha Sha'ar, during the time of trouble as Yisrael is narrowed and Jews are besieged, Lahem Shakar, they will approach by earnestly seeking Yahweh, longing to learn about the relationship. For those who respond to the invitation to attend the Teruah harvest in September of 2033, an eternity with Yahweh and the Breath Covenant family awaits those gleaned, who will be joined with those harvested 3 years earlier. But then, aside from the final 7,000 Yehudim who are among the dwindling remnant who will return to Yahweh at the very last moment on Kippurim in October of 2033, there will be no other opportunities All remaining souls will either be extinguished or incarcerated. This long intermission would last 2,500 years, or 50 yobel, between Yahweh and Yisrael and Yehudah, for whom the last of the prophets would come. Re-engagement for reconciliation would then commence 25 years before the Shavuah harvest of standing grain. At long last, Yehudim are emerging from their nightmarish past, opening their eyes, walking away from religion and politics, and becoming observant. And what before their wondering eyes appears but Ad Asher Shamar, the opportunity to closely examine and carefully consider the way to receive the benefits of the relationship, all through the restoring testimony of the eternal witness. For this reason, Yada Yahweh was prepared and is ready for them. And in this regard, it is telling that the comprehensive rewrites of Goddamn Religion and Twistianity, the completion of Coming Home, Volumes 3 and 4, and the final edits of Yada Yahweh as a series, will be completed just as the sun sets in Jerusalem on the Shabbat of May 22nd, 2026. Well, we'll pick up at this point a week from today on the next celebration of Shabbat on Yada Yah Radio. We look forward to being with you then, and I hope you take Yisrael and Goyim, because there's 2 years remaining for you, these words seriously. God is offering one last opportunity for Goyim, three more for Yisrael, although what they will endure past this next opportunity will be hellish. So I'd strongly encourage you to accept his invitation sooner rather than later. Moreover, if you accept it sooner rather than later, then you can be part of the solution. You will be able to go to Yahweh on Shavuah knowing that you made a contribution in the lives of his people, that you advanced the cause of his son, that you served the creator God of the universe, and you will carry that satisfaction with you forevermore. It's worth doing.
Well,
the rewards are enormous, but the biggest reward of all is knowing that you did something marvelous that pleased our God. Well, thank you for listening. I look forward to being with you this time next week. We have a lot to share, a lot to learn as we march towards the last of days. May Yah bless you all. Good night.
Shalom. Shalom.
Night, guys.
Good night, Dave. Night, Yah.
Night, Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be present in Louisiana. Select parishes only. Licensee partner, Amelia Belle Casino. Terms and conditions. Conditions apply.
Hey, too basic. Hi there. Still no. What about hello, handsome? Ugh, is it possible to give yourself the ick? Yep, it's possible. Ugh.
Well, that's why we're changing how you start conversations on Bumble. You can now make the first move or not. With opening moves, you simply choose a question to be automatically sent to your matches, then sit back and let your matches start the chat. Download Bumble and try it for yourself.